Welcome back to the Compass Podcast. I'm your host for this episode, Zach, hosting with my colleague, Will. Will, thanks for joining me for the episode.
For sure.
So we're back to talking about off-grid mining this episode. Two very special guests coming up. I'm excited to talk with them about the company they've built, the opportunities they see in the off-grid mining, the off-grid sector of the Bitcoin mining industry. And we'll definitely talk about Texas a bit since three quarters of us on this show are based here. It should be a fun episode. So without any further delay, let's jump in.
I hope that you enjoyed this episode. If you do, please consider subscribing and leaving a review on your preferred listening platform. It really helps out the show. The Compass Podcast is presented commercial free by Compass, the number one Bitcoin mining marketplace. If you want to get started mining Bitcoin, source hard to find ASICs, or find competitively priced hosting space, then check Compass out at compassmining.io. And now, on to the show.
Matt, Brent, thanks so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate you guys taking the time to chat with Will and me. I'm excited. Thanks so much.
Yeah, appreciate you having us.
So I kind of want to start off, I guess, with a little bit of a boring question. Maybe for background, we've done a few episodes over the past couple of months about off-grid mining, natural gas powered mining. Well, in my opinion, doesn't get enough attention, but it's getting an increasing amount of attention over the past, I guess, like 8 to 12 months. And you guys are solidly in the middle of that trend in the mining industry. Can you tell us a little bit about, like, out of everywhere you could have gone in the Bitcoin industry or the mining industry, how you ended up here, how you built the company you guys run, basically how you came to work where you are now?
Yeah, absolutely. So, we chose Texas because it's Texas. There's a lot of opportunities that lie therein with oil and gas, especially on Brent's side of things. But Texas all around, we think, provides the most opportunity, most pro-business, lowest taxes overall. And obviously, there's a lot of connections on both of our sides. Both went to Texas A&M, one of the largest oil and gas colleges in the nation. So there's Aggies all around throughout College Station, especially within the Bitcoin space. Clark Moody, Dan Held, a lot of Bitcoiners out there, Travis Kling. We're really pro Texas as much as we are pro Bitcoin.
Yeah, I would agree with Matt. So like you said, we both went to Texas A&M. Matt's the one that orange peeled me, got me into Bitcoin, and kind of got me down the rabbit hole. I would say that was probably 2017, and he knew that I was third generation oil and gas. So I am born and raised in Texas. All my life, I've just been in the energy industry and had a hands on approach. So Matt actually saw some people that were working on this, and there wasn't really anyone in the market in Texas and really like in the United States, except for North Dakota and Wyoming. So he approached me. It's like, hey, do you know where some flare gas is? Do you think this could work? And I was like, yeah, know exactly where some flare gas is. And we kind of just used our connections that we had in the state of Texas. And that's kind of why we've stayed in Texas, as well as Texas has the best regulation as far as pro business, and has probably some of the most flare gas and stranded gas out of any other state. So it's lots of opportunity for off-grid mining.
Yeah, for sure. Some of those opportunities you guys have, I guess, even gone like viral for on Twitter with some of those cool looking videos, you've posted about actual like machines running on site. Can you give us like, I mean, this may be a little bit challenging, but like in 60 seconds, can you give us like flared gas mining 101, from starting with like a phone call with a gas company to the ASICs actually hashing? Like, what's that whole process look like? Either one, whoever wants to take it.
Yeah. So, the 60 seconds, we come in, we approach natural gas producers, they're getting zero for their gas. We say we can give you a little bit of something. We come in with all of our infrastructure that's operated and owned by Giga Energy Solutions, deploy our setup. So, that would be natural gas generator. Hook it up to their wellhead, float that natural gas through an engine, combusts it in the engine instead of a flare, right? Produces electricity. That electricity then powers our data centers, which we build. And that data center is then mining Bitcoin.
Awesome. So there's like a couple different ways that sort of arrangement, from conversations I've had, I'm obviously not an expert. There's a couple ways that business arrangement can work. It sounds like you guys have arranged it such that your clients or customers, I guess, never actually like own or see the Bitcoin. You're just paying them for the power. Is that right?
That's correct.
Have you had any interest in like companies like, well, we actually want to mine ourselves, like buy hardware and such through you, or like what sort of opportunities or like demand are you seeing?
I would say that you're starting to see a large increase in people wanting to do JVs and wanting to take a part of that Bitcoin. We kind of modeled our business when we were doing this, we would go into oil and gas, pretty big companies, and we would talk to them and they wouldn't call it Bitcoin. They would refer to it as magic money. So they had no desire to be a part of that. And it was a very, oil and gas, I would say in a lot of aspects lacks technology. And that was one thing they did not want to get involved with was this new great thing, which is Bitcoin, which is digital money. They just rather fiat.
That's interesting you say that, because I was curious about that exact thing because of the way it sounds like you have the arrangement set up pretty much that you manage all the Bitcoin stuff and you just buy from them. All they get is a paycheck for the fuel. Like, can you like tell me a little bit more about that? Like, what sort of mental barriers or like, I don't know, like scorn even or something have you seen from like you tell people, hey, we want to buy your power to mine Bitcoin? And obviously you're giving them money for something that nobody else would buy, but there's still that, I mean, like you said, like weird magic internet money vibe there. Like, maybe Matt, like how are those conversations going, or maybe how they started compared to how they're going now?
Oh yeah. They started with us having a lot of meetings and zero traction. Right. And then we quickly realized, okay, no, it's really hard to scale this. No one wants to buy this stuff. And if they do, the barrier to entry and the hurdles required to getting them to learn that stuff, is far too long to be scalable. And so we decided, you know what, we just got to own everything. We got to do it ourselves. And then to them, we're just burning their gas. And it's no different than a compressor, and they're used to these engines. They're used to these large oil and gas equipment. So, right, they understand everything to what they're hooking up to, but they don't understand how revenue is being produced oftentimes. Now, we've gotten a lot, especially from kind of this viralness that's been going on, a lot of attention and inquiries about, hey, now we'd like to own this stuff. But again, kind of come back to scalability, that doesn't necessarily make sense when we're trying to bring as much hash rate online as possible in terms of every time we have, you'd like to buy this equipment. Well, now we got to source the ASICs, right? It's kind of that same process over again. Whereas if we can own it, gas producer understands, oh, okay, I need to get you gas and hammer on a union and then you're good to go and I don't need to do anything else. And they understand a dollar per MCF. MCF is a unit of gas. They understand how they're getting paid. And they know how to meter that. And they don't understand. They don't need to understand anything past that. I mean, we had one of our old producers just last week say, man, I still don't understand how y'all make money. But I was like, but I write you a paycheck every month, don't I? He's like, yeah, you do. You do.
Really good to have you both on the show. So I'm going to ask the question that no one's supposed to ask. So for miners, it's like the question is, do they sell their Bitcoin? And what do they do with their Bitcoin? Are they hodlers or are they sellers? And of course, we've always seen in the media that this question gets brought up a lot and it's like, oh, the miners dumped on us again, like shame on them. But for you guys, you have a very different structure from a business standpoint than your typical miners out there, just because you have a different overhead. So if you're comfortable sharing, what's it like kind of looking at your business structure and then deciding how to hold or sell Bitcoin to cover your operational expenses?
Yeah. So obviously, long-term hodlers, right? We know it's going to 10 million, right? Question is, what is that trajectory, right? Whatever that dollar price is. And so when you look at stuff on a shorter time interval, it gets a little tricky. And so dollar cost selling is what we kind of incur in order to pay literal expenses, right? Because you have to deal with that. And so that is kind of with market sentiment, not speculating, right? We don't do that. It's just we cut a check at the end of the month. That's what's required to keep the business running. And then on the other side of those things, we have one of the lowest power producing costs in the world that is scalable to large amounts. And so for us, right, part of that is we're in a bull market, we're making a lot of money, but you do give up upside sometimes and you just can't speculate on that. And you just got to cut a check at the end of the month and pay very nominal amounts for that or operation fees. And then if price dips or goes up, so be it. But on the other side of things, right, when revenue is really low, we're still able to be profitable. And purchasing equipment and still having that far higher margins than other people around.
No, I was just going to say part of being, I think there's definitely a lag between you and me, but like part of being a hodler is like by definition, giving up upside from time to time because short-term markets are cyclical. You can't really avoid it. But like even out of like even considering derivatives traders, miners are by far the most leveraged long entities in the industry, like by a mile, in terms of how much they have riding on the long-term success of this industry. I want to know, like, sort of adjacent to Will's question, and then Will, I'll toss it back to you, but how quickly has y'all's team and like client base grown over the past couple of years, considering like you're hodling and we have like different market cycles to weather and stuff? Like, if you don't mind sharing, like how what sort of growth have you been seeing on your team?
Yeah, I would say, well, you know, we didn't start until probably summer of 2019 is when we actually started the company. So we've only been around for right at 2 years now. I would say that we have seen a lot of growth. There was a lot of growth as far as we kind of purchased a lot of our equipment as a hedge before this bull run. So we actually, some of the people that we're working with bought just a ton of miners before the actual bull run happened. So we really kind of like got lucky with that. So that's really grown our company. As well as this, you know, I would say the only issue has been is there's been a lot of noise once you got up to $60,000, where we, you know, a lot of people were offering us, hey, like, hey, will you come take our gas? And we say, no, we're just not really operating in this area. And they would say, well, we'll pay for everything. We'll do this. And it's like, no, like, you know, there was a lot of noise that we felt wasn't really sustainable. So I would say that our company definitely was growing, and it's been growing at a great speed. But we're trying to also build a sustainable company. We never want to spread ourselves thin, because we know that we said this in many calls, but $60,000 Bitcoin, it was definitely a bull run. We said you can't think of $40 hash price all the time. It's not going to stay. You have to be able to plan for worse times. And, you know, here we are now, it's what, like 20 cents right now. So it's half of what it was. And I'm sure it's only going to continue going down like it always does.
Well, you guys are sitting on like 20, I don't know, like you said, 2019 or something, like $15, $20 terahash ASICs over there. That's, I mean, hash price, yeah, it's going down, but those ASIC prices are probably looking pretty good on your balance sheet. Do you wish you bought more?
Of course.
So I want to kind of get into the business dynamics of your market specifically. And I think this question only gets more interesting with the possible arrival of a lot of Chinese miners onto the market. So we have like Upstream Data, Crusoe, you guys, Great North American Mining, or Great American Mining. I'm sure there's some other players out there that I don't know of. What does it look like right now in terms of competitive structures? At some point, I'm assuming there could be competition between all these people who are trying to, you know, flare all this gas for Bitcoin. I'm assuming right now it's like pretty friendly. But what does it look like in a few years? Are you guys worried about competition in that space? And how do you guys kind of like box out competition and protect your own business? And then what do you think about Chinese miners coming in and getting into the business itself as well? I'm assuming that's going to take a few years. So kind of two questions there. I'll take it wherever you want.
I'll answer the first one. Matt, you want to talk about the Chinese miners coming in? So I would say, the competition, that's something a lot of people have asked us before, of just like, one, a lot of times they're not even referring to the current competition as much as they're referring to someone like, hey, what about BP or Exxon? What if they come in and just take all the gas, right? Our kind of view on it is there's enough gas being flared off in the state of Texas each year to power the entire state. I think there's enough flare gas to power the Bitcoin network. Do you remember what it was, Matt? It was like 7 or 8 times over. It's something absurd. So it's literally, there's so much gas being wasted. If there was no gas left to take, that'd be a really good problem. And you know, that's just not even a thought for us. As well, as the market share is so huge. There's room for tons of players, more than just what the current, you know, I think there's probably 4 or 5 of us that are doing it on a larger scale. And I know at least like a dozen more that are trying to get into this right now. So I think there's room for plenty of us, and that's only going to kind of probably increase. Even though you're seeing flaring regulations cracking down, that's just an incentive for us to have more, for more companies to call us and have us come in and take their gas. As well as what we're seeing right now is there's a lot of pipelines being shut in, and it's really hard for people to lay pipelines now due to environmental concerns. So a lot of companies are saying, hey, I really want to get this oil out of the ground, but you know, I got to go across federal lands to get this pipeline to the nearest market. There's a lot of different issues where they're like, hey, why don't I just think of this gas as a byproduct and I can still make the numbers work producing this oil, and these guys can come in, take all this regulation burden off my back and mine Bitcoin with it, right? So I look, that's kind of where I see Bitcoin kind of coming in and being a big part of the oil and gas industry in the future.
Yeah, on that note, I mean, hash rate, right? Whether it comes from Great American Mining, Crusoe, or China, still debases my revenue just the same. So we don't really think of it in terms of our competitive landscape's the world, right? Not necessarily a miner in that space, especially to Brent's point that there's so much flare gas out there, you're really not going to bump shoulders on that end. So that doesn't really worry as much as, right, total hash rate does, right? And that is where you come from, the lowest cost producing energy and being able to stay in it for the long run. Chinese miners are in a bit of a pickle right now, right? They're 1 to 2 week notice out of the country. And then I saw too, just not too long ago, is now they're required to tear down all that electrical infrastructure. So that's really kicking the pants on that end of things. And so they're scrambling right now and they're in terrible negotiating positions. Everyone knows what's going on. They're trying to bring hash rate all over, not just the US, but right throughout Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan and all throughout there. And everyone knows the position they're in, and building hash rate sticky. Building that electrical infrastructure and getting load capacity online is sticky on that end of things. And so it's hard to bring that hash rate online pretty darn quick. They're in a tough position right now, especially for negotiations, long-term PPAs, and getting that equipment deployed on that sort of things. And so ASIC acquisition, that's always going to be a commodity. ASIC prices will track what their revenue stream is, generally depending on supply constraints. And so that's never really been a concern of ours either. You can always purchase an ASIC as long as you can afford to run it. And we can generally afford to run them pretty low.
That makes sense. I have a little bit of a tough question. I don't want to put you guys too much on the spot. But so what I want to ask is, going back to something Matt was talking about, there's like, obviously we're all in this because we care deeply about the success of the Bitcoin network. Miners are some of the most like leveraged long players in the space. But you could imagine a scenario in like the not so distant future where flared gas miners, or just sort of like stranded energy miners in general, head up or butt up against sort of like a moral hazard, where like the regulations on these types of fuels sort of provide a moat for these operators to like grow and increase their market share and whatnot. Have you like, I mean, I'm just sort of taking a stab in the dark here. It's purely hypothetical, but have you like thought through this, or how do you sort of like think through that potential scenario where obviously you and other players in this segment of the market could benefit from like even more stringent regulation on natural gas companies and flaring and all this sort of stuff? Like, does that make sense? How do you think through that?
Are you asking how could it affect us in a positive outlook, or how could this oil and gas regulation affect us in a negative?
And how it could affect you positively while natural gas companies sort of are slapped with even like stricter regulation on how they manage their drilling sites and this sort of stuff. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. Matt, you want to talk about it?
Yeah. So regulation always going towards the left. We're always curving towards the left. Texas Railroad Commission came out, big thing with this new administration, the Texas RRC. The Railroad Commission, they regulate oil and gas in the state of Texas, is flaring. In NAEP 2019, NAEP is kind of the large oil and gas conference. The main speaker is like, flaring is a large black eye on the industry. And so everyone's aware of it. Everyone knows it's coming towards an end, or at least being cracked down on. All the major oil companies have mandates of limiting flaring or eliminating flaring by 2030, 2040, 2025, et cetera. And so it's coming. And so our thesis is, if we can operate in a unregulated environment, then we can only be more successful in a regulated environment where it helps us. Now, it's important to keep in mind that it's a double-edged sword on regulations, because with flaring and natural gas regulations often come air permitting quality regulations. And so being able to run these natural gas generators in a setting like that is also important. And so it's a bit of a double-edged sword on that regulatory front, but in our opinion, it's only ever going towards the left.
So this comes from us working at Compass. Compass is obviously like a highly retail-focused mining company, and like I would say 95% at least percent of the work you do, maybe 100%, doesn't interface with retail customers whatsoever. But like I believe, and I know lots of other miners believe, like the future of mining in terms of sustainability and security and whatnot is off grid. So my question is, how do retail miners get access to this type of mining? Like, you can like buy a cloud hosting contract, or you can buy and host a miner through something like Compass. But if you want to go off grid, but you don't have the capital to sort of go to a natural gas site, build all this infrastructure and host ASICs there, is there any way, or will there be, in sort of like the near to midterm future, a way for retail miners to sort of tap into the mining market that you guys are building?
So I would say with us, no, just because of kind of like our thesis of where, you know, of Bitcoin mining and like kind of our idea of where we think the company needs to go. We truly believe that vertical integration is key to this business model. I would say that there's going to be some people that come in the space probably. I'm sure there's going to be some people that offer hosting. I actually think Steve offered some hosting on some of his hash huts for a while. I don't know if he still does. And I'm sure some other people, I've been seeing it on Twitter lately. I've been seeing some natural gas guys kind of say like some of the Chinese miners are posting on Twitter, or some people were talking about it and they're like, hey, we got plenty of room. It's not something we kind of wanted to go towards. The reason is, I would say hosting with this off-grid is completely different from what hosting probably looks like with Compass or with electrical grid. We have oil wells that have gas production, right? So gas doesn't always come out of the ground the same speed. At times you may have to shed load because of intermittency of production. You may have a generator go down and you're not going to have the exact same generator on standby. So you're going to have times where there's going to be downtime. Now, it's not a lot. I don't know a lot about the hosting industry, so you can maybe further explain it to me. But my understanding is there's guaranteed amounts of uptime and guaranteed amounts of different metrics. And you can't give that with the oil and gas industry or with the off-grid mining, because there's just too many factors to play. I feel like it would have to be a lot more relaxed term sheet.
I think you can definitely have second derivatives of value saying through publicly traded companies though, in 5-10 years, where buying stock in these companies. Now the multiples that they're trading has another story, but I think you can have second layers of value.
So when is Giga Energy going to IPO?
It was a little time.
Sure.
And jump in with one more question. So kind of going back to the financing angle, I'm wondering what kind of financial products you guys as miners are interested in. Recently, we saw Alchemia, I think is how you pronounce it, or something similar, protocol launch. And then, of course, there's been like BBTC 35A tokens, whatever, like hash rate tokens in general. Do you guys have interest in financial products that allow you to offset your risk exposure in general to the market? And do you guys use those currently?
We do not use them currently, but yeah, I mean, we would have interest. I mean, hash price, locking that in. What do? I mean, I think you long hash rate, short Bitcoin. Yeah, stuff like that. If there was financial products that do that, every industry does that, no matter how long you are on oil, as an oilman, you're still going to use those products and financial services. And so as Bitcoin becomes more robust, and we believe it's supposed to be a multi-trillion dollar asset, traditional financial services will be used and utilized as every other business in the world. And so that's inevitable in our opinion, especially with intermittency. I mean, the amount of correlation between Bitcoin and the oil and gas is just phenomenal. I mean, it's just shocking, like the amount that you have in between it. I mean, you got bunch of crooks, you got a bunch of volatility, super high capex, and like a lot of instability. And then, right, you got cartels. I mean, it's just like, right, everything's the same. And so there's a lot of similarities. And so, I mean, we see that continuing to grow.
We've had people before that, you know, they said we were talking and we were like, well, you know, they're probably gonna have a hard time right when we started. We're like, they're gonna have a hard time understanding this because Bitcoin can, you know, it can fluctuate 50% at times. And they said, oh, wow. It'd be a shame if oil and gas guys couldn't understand commodities fluctuating 50%. They're like, they're very well aware of volatility just being in the oil and gas industry.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point in general for a lot of people in the Bitcoin space, because there's always like this notion of hodling your Bitcoin, but every firm and every industry has to offset its risk somehow through financial derivatives. I'm thinking of like Strike in particular, which is like that new payment app for Bitcoin that they're using in El Salvador. And they have a lot of stuff on the back end that allows them to offset their exposure for sending your Bitcoin across the ocean. but most people don't know that because we're just thinking about hodling all the time, and I think miners can kind of get finger wagged at a bit for selling their Bitcoin to protect themselves.
Well, let's hope that Bitcoin never trades at negative prices. We can leave that to the oil industry. We don't really need any of that over here. Guys, this has been a ton of fun. I have one more question I want to for each of you, but I want to thank you for your time. This conversation has been super informative for me, and I know for our audience too. But I want to hop all the way back to us talking about competition, like the size of potential growth in this industry, all of that. Considering like the enormous amount of wasted gas there is out there that could be harnessed to mine Bitcoin, thinking forward to the next halving, what's your guess on like a percentage of total network hash rate that, I mean, it'll probably be difficult to measure, but like guess on percentage of network hash rate, total network hash rate that comes from like flared gas or just off-grid natural gas mining in general. Matt and Brent, whoever wants to go first.
Good question. So let's see, 2024, I'd say what, 10x hashes seems reasonable in 3 years?
Sure, yeah.
10x, okay. Well, then it's time for us to get in, Zach.
Well, I don't think it's anywhere close to an exahash right now. So 1,000 petahashes of off-grid mining, that surprised me.
Thing is, I would say we probably at least are at an exahash off-grid mining, not to play devil's advocate with Matt.
I guess.
I mean, in fact, like it depends on if Caruso's got a lot of infrastructure built out. So if they're not mining shit coins and they're actually mining Bitcoin, then yeah, we could be looking at an exahash total of off-grid mining with Bitcoin, with natural gas. I think it's only going to increase. I think you're looking at least a 10x before the next halving. I think you're going to see a lot of institutions that are doing Bitcoin mining, a lot of bigger, big players that they're like, oh, wow, someone could shut down our grid. Clearly, we don't live in communist China. But I think it is a serious threat. I see tweets all the time where they say, not your grid, not your Bitcoin. And that's something that you do have to think about. I think you could see where a lot of people are saying, okay, we want to make sure that if we're going to deploy all this capital, it's going to be deployed somewhere safe where we know that we have control of it. And that means, you know, buying this flare gas and being able to own that infrastructure. So I think you're going to see a lot more growth of that before the halving. So 15%, awesome. That's mine. 15%.
15%. Let's go. That'd be beautiful.
I'm very bullish.
15 or 50, Brent?
15. Oh no, not 50. No. 15%.
That's exactly
150.
Yeah.
Well, we'll take what we can get, I guess. thanks guys though. This has been a ton of fun. I really enjoyed the conversation and I'm excited to see, I mean, one exahash at a time. Let's grow this off-grid mining. Thanks for your time. This has been super fun.
All right. Appreciate it, guys.
Hey, guys.
Thanks, guys.
That's a wrap for us at the Compass Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please subscribe and consider leaving us a 5-star review on your preferred listening platform. Thanks again, everyone. The thoughts and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests on the Compass Podcast are their own and do not represent the opinions of Compass Mining, Inc. None of this content should be considered financial advice.